Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Hi, I'm Rob Schneider. And I'm Kevin David Thomas.
Kevin, you hesitated. I thought you were thinking of your name for a second.
I wanted to give you the full like pleasure of saying your name. I haven't heard you with your voice in a really long time, Rob. So I was just savoring it, really.
Oh Jesus! Wow. That, you know what? That's actually true because we haven't seen each other for about a month.
I know, and I feel very deprived. It's very strange because we have spent virtually every single day together for the last year. A month is a really long time.
I hope your wife doesn't mind, but I snuck into the house and I took one of your flannels and I just sleep with it at night. And I quietly put on Gene Kelly's Clown Around.
Okay. You know what, though? I learned two things recently. I learned that there are two holy grails of the cast recording. And as I'm saying this, I'm looking up the second one because I cannot remember what it's called. But Clown Around is considered one of the holy grails of cast album collecting. I never knew. And I've never heard of it. And I promptly, Gene Kelly, went on eBay to try to find it. $100 $100 for the LP. Never happens anymore.
Really?
Yeah, I'm just serious.
Kevin, I will give you 50. Or just send me the link. I don't need to eat this week.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, and I'm trying to look up the other one right now because I couldn't remember. But I'll come back to you on that. But there's another one that is another rare 19, like in the 50s or 60s, like a demo album. And I looked that one up, and that was like $300. And I can't remember what it's called right now. But someone's like probably saying out loud right now and is like, Kevin, you should know this. So
Clown Around, if I remember correctly.
Side note, the cast album website is completely changed, everybody. Okay, anyway, keep going.
Wait, is this your castalbums.org?
Oh, yeah, that I did my whole thing on. I believe it's like, or am I on, oh, wait, nope, I'm on the wrong one. Oh, gosh.
That's probably why. That's why Sam Goody website or something.
I went to castalbum.com.
Oh, well, that's different than castalbums.org.
Oh, gosh, it's down. That's so weird. Okay, anyway, I'm sorry. Cut this out because I'm just total. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You're so sad.
Okay. Clown Around.
Yes. So it was Gene Kelly, but it was like in the 70s. It wasn't like MGM Gene Kelly.
No.
It was like old Gene Kelly.
Old Gene Kelly. That's correct. And I guess it was like not really commercially released. It's on Masterworks here. Yeah, it's got a really funky cover, very colorful, almost like the cover of The Grind. It was recorded in 1972 by RCA Victor, and this is not my favorite thing, but I'm obsessed that, A, I never, ever heard of it. Moose Charlotte did the music, and I never knew that this was a musical, and listeners, school me, because I didn't know.
Or just send us $50 or $100. So we can buy the bootleg, and then we'll play it for you.
Oh, this article, like Peter Felicia did the article on this on Broadway Masterworks. So if you're curious about Clown Around, go there and check out what Peter was talking about.
I'm going to see Peter tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, you are?
Yeah.
You got to ask him. You got to ask him about it.
Oh, my God. I hope Peter doesn't mind me asking him like 90 million questions about the most obscure musical.
Are you kidding me? Nevertheless, he loved it. He loved every moment of it.
He does. He does indeed. God bless him. He sent me an article, which isn't online, and it's so good. It's an article of his called How Musicals Ruin My Marriage. And it's
okay.
So Peter's talked about this before, but his first wife, Linda, because Linda's just his girlfriend. Linda's just
right.
his girlfriend.
Of 20-something years, yeah.
Yeah, who used to drag his ex-wife, though, to, like, every single horrible musical that was playing in Boston or Baltimore or this way and that way. And so, anyway, that's the whole article is about how the musical sort of just ruined his marriage. But it's a great article, and I'm so sorry. I shouldn't be starting on something so optimistic. hey, can I tell you something?
Yes.
So I want to, may I give a shout out, Kevin? May I do a shout out?
I'm waiting for it. Yeah.
Thank God.
You better.
So I went back to my hometown for a month.
Okay.
I'm in Thousand Oaks, California. And the community theater that I grew up at, was doing chess.
Oh, wow.
I know. Very ambitious.
Because I hear that script comes with a disclaimer that says you can rearrange the scenes if you can make it work.
Well, that's what the director did. The director apparently really likes chess, so he just sort of like picked and chose for what he wanted to do. But because nobody really does chess anymore, they couldn't get anybody auditioning for it. So the music director, and there were two music directors, and their respective spouses, not only music directed the show, they were also in the ensemble because they couldn't get enough people.
Oh, bless.
How dedicated is that?
Oh, I love that.
So anyway, I grew up at this theater. It was called the Conejo Players Theater. And when I went there, oh, my gosh, I was treated like a king because they all know me from the podcast.
Really?
Yeah. I was really, like, excited. Like, okay, so everyone came up and said hi to me and stuff. But then I found out that one of the women who works at the theater, her son loves our podcast, and he's like, he wanted me to give this to you, and he made a drawing of me.
Oh, I saw that. I saw that online, yeah.
His name is Jake Fagundes. He's a talented young artist, and I was so – Kevin, I was touched. Somebody made a portrait of me, and what I love is he actually gave me a jawline.
Yeah, I noticed that. You look really good.
Thanks. Thanks. Yeah. It's on my bathroom mirror, so every morning I wake up, you will look like this. You will, Rob.
You do. You already do, Rob.
Oh. And then
it.
When
oh,
I was in
that cool.
In L.A., how cool is this? Remember when you were talking about the John Kenley Players?
Yeah, that's what I'm.
Okay, so there's a young man. He's only 19 years old. He loves our podcast. His name is Addison. Guess what he decided to do because he was so inspired by your favorite thing?
He's gonna have a theater called the John Kenley Players, and it's gonna be in Long Island Beach.
Good guess, but no.
I don't know. He's gonna do a documentary on John Kenley.
Yes, and he was inspired specifically from you talking about him.
Oh, bless him. Oh, that is so cool. That is
isn't that
incredible?
Cool?
Yeah,
his name is Addison Calvin.
Oh, man. Addison, thank you. Well done, sir.
So I was supposed to say on air, because he said it was okay, if anybody knows anything about the Kenley Players, like you worked there or you knew John Kenley personally, tweet us or message us, because we'd love to get you in touch with Addison, because he's got lots of questions.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, definitely. Private message us, whatever you want to do. Yeah, reach out. So we can get that. That's great.
We love the private messages, by the way.
Oh yeah,
we get so many of them, and I was very thankful for all of our listeners this year.
Oh, that's great. That's really cool, Rob. I'm really happy for that.
Did you go around the table and go, I was thankful for?
We did a variation of that. Yes, we did, and because I was with my family down south, and it was an unexpected trip since we were able to all be together. My dad's been sick, and he was able to get away, and so we really had a wonderful time, and that was. I think that was what we were all thankful for the most. But anyway, I'm sorry, interrupted you. Keep going, Rob.
Oh, no, you didn't for me at all. I wanted to see what you did for Thanksgiving.
Oh, it was great. It was so wonderful. And we sat around and we decorated the tree and, you know, all of those, you know, family things that we used to do. And I have a sister and she's got a whole family now. And she was able to come up as well. And we just did all of those, you know, traditional things that we thought we were going to miss out on this year. And we ended up not being able to do it. So it was very special. Very special.
Oh, that makes me so happy. That makes me so happy. That's really lovely. I sang Turkey Lurkey Time for everyone and was asked to leave the room.
I definitely played it full blast when I was taking a shower. I definitely did. Yeah.
that's very lovely, Kevin.
And Sutton was like brushing her teeth or something, and she was like, "What is this song?" And I'm like, "It's Burt Bacharach." And she's like, "Yeah, I guess so." Oh man.
I guess so. Whatever.
I'm like, it's like an office party song. It doesn't really further the plot. It's just fun.
I just picture you naked yelling in the shower.
Oh, then you should have seen me trying to do the choreography of that, like, lady standing on the table with her hands and, like, with the head going side. I'm doing it right now as I'm talking to you. But like, da, 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 and she's like.
I think we should have a joint family holiday together. I think, because my family hasn't met your family. I think we should all get together somewhere and everyone can meet each other.
I like that. That'd be fun.
My dad had lots of suggestions about the podcast when I was out in California.
Did he?
Yep.
What were some of the good ones?
Well, he said that if you ever get sick, he'll go on with me.
Oh, thanks.
So just be aware.
Okay, great. I got an understudy. Perfect.
And you got an understudy. He and Donna Murphy will come the Tuesday, your Tuesday afternoons that you don't do. But no, he was saying that he wants to do a thing where we bring him. He's really hell bent on this idea, Kevin. And I keep trying to tell him, I'm like, Dad, I don't know if it's a good idea, but thanks for the suggestion. He wants to come on and he wants us to pretend that he's actually like somebody who was in the business and like give him a fake name and see how many like listeners reach out and be like, oh, I remember Joe Smith and Guys and Dolls. But he like comes up with these stories. He's like, and then Sammy Kahn directed me in Guys and Dolls, and that was in Baltimore. And then they fired me for Stubby K. And he wants to see how many people are like, I saw him. I saw him in Baltimore. I saw him before they fired Stubby K.
That's so funny to me. I don't know why. I actually think it's brilliant. Now we've just given it away, so hopefully people will forget. By April 1st, people will forget. But
we should absolutely do that. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's good.
So,
that's good.
So wait a minute.
Oh, wow.
And we should tell people, you're probably noticing, I am, Kevin will tell you this, I am very fastidious about having a lot of episodes in the can ready to go just in case something should ever go awry.
Fastidious is a good word. I would say obsessive / stressed out about it / there are many words that will go to it. But yes, fastidious is a good one. That's a good word.
Thank you. Thank you. And I miscalculated, and I thought we had another one for this week that we weren't seeing each other. And then I realized, oh, my God, I counted wrong. And so Kevin and I are doing this over the phone. We still have not seen each other yet. So this is an over the phone one. So you might notice a little disparity in the audio quality.
But yes, thank you for your patience.
And thank you, by the way, for all the kind words about the interviews that we've done recently with Kay and Tova and Ken Page. We got a lot of good.
And Mimi, I still cannot get over the ending of that interview when she's like, "What's a podcast?" And you're like, "It's where you." I played it for Sutton. I played it for my family. I mean, Sutton cried when she listened to it because it's just so moving. She's like, "This is going to be here forever." And you were like, "Yeah." And she's like, wow. At that moment, it was really, I was like, this is why we do it. That was really special.
Loved it. Yeah. God, and a big thanks to Mark Sendroff for setting that up.
Yes. And Kay, and yeah, what a class act he is.
Yeah. So thank you, Mark. We appreciate it. So what is your favorite thing?
Well, mine's a little different than what I usually do because it's not a musical and it's not a cast recording and it's not even a YouTube clip. It's a documentary. I never had heard of it, and I just watched it, and it came out in 2005. It's about, it takes place in New York City. It is not necessarily about musicals. However, there are Broadway people that show up in it, actually. And it's actually a dance documentary. But not the kind of dance that you'd expect in something that's like, you know, really hardcore and all of that, but it's actually kids dancing. More specifically, 11-year-old fifth graders.
What?
Has anyone heard of the documentary that Nickelodeon put out called Mad Hot Ballroom in 2005?
I saw you talking about this on Facebook.
I did. I am obsessed with it. It's on Hulu, I believe, and I think you could probably get it other places and pay like the $250 or whatever you have to pay nowadays. It was directed by a woman named Amy Sewell, wrote it, and Marilyn, I can't remember, I'm hiding, Agrello, I think her name is, directed it. It's based on an article that Ms. Sewell wrote and in the early aughts about this program that exists in the New York City public schools for fifth graders, and it's where they teach them ballroom dancing. We're talking like merengue, foxtrot, swing, one or two other versions, tango, and the rumba. And they, this guy started it in 1994 by the name of Pierre Dulaine, and he was a world-class ballroom champion, and he started this program to sort of teach kids how to, not only how to dance, but how to carry themselves and how to interact with each other and just how to be good human beings. And ballroom was sort of the way in for that. In some of these schools, you have a lot of troubled kids. You have kids that the one school in Washington Heights, it's mostly Dominican, and they are 97% below the poverty line. And yet here they are learning how to ballroom dance, you know, and with each other. And it really shows the experience through the eyes of the students. And it's a very, very well done documentary. And basically what happens is they follow three schools, one in Tribeca, more affluent kids, one in Bensonhurst, which is more Italian and Asian, and then the Washington Heights, the Dominican. And it follows the individual teachers teaching the kids how to do all these dances. You see the kids react. You see what their observations of life are, which is very fascinating because they're so raw and they don't really judge themselves yet. And it's very innocent and very sweet. You actually can relate to it, but it all culminates with a citywide dance competition between all of the schools. And so they have the quarterfinals, the semifinals, and then they have the eventual finals. And you follow each of these schools as they go into it, and I don't want to give anything away because I literally jumped up and screamed at the end when I found out who won because it was just so special. What's cool, though, at the very end, you see the judges for the finale, you know, the final big one they did at the Financial Center downtown with that big atrium. They performed there, and the judges were Graciela Daniel and Lion King. I was like,
oh, wow.
There's Anne Lion King. I know that eyeliner anywhere. And then there's Graciela Daniel. I know that short hair anywhere. And they were the judges for these little kids that were dancing. And they were it was just the sweetest thing. And I was completely transfixed by it. And I just urge you all to go out and see it because the most important thing about it is you see why the arts are important in our public schools. It is proof. And now this program, this program that this man, Pierre Dulaine, who incidentally, just side note, he was, after being a world champion ballroom dancer with his partner, he played, he was in the original of Grand Hotel on Broadway. He choreographed the ballroom dance sequences. He was the gigolo in that.
Oh my God.
Right? And then a couple years later, 1994, he started this thing called Dancing Classrooms, which is now over 12,000 students have been involved, and it's still going to this day. And now he travels all over the world sharing this program of dance as a way, as a tool to make better human beings out of the students, you know, teaching them like life lessons as the way the arts can do, whether or not they go into dance or anything like that. You see these kids, you know, you see some of these kids that could have gone one direction, and because of the dance thing, they swerved into the other. And so I walked away from this movie just being proud to be an artist, being these teachers, Rob, and you see the way they're teaching these kids. It is magical because, you know, they're not getting paid enough money to do what they're doing. And yet they're spending their own money to buy the outfits. You can tell they are invested in the lives of their students in a way that only a great, wonderful teacher could be. And you can, I was proud. I was really proud to be in the arts and to be a teacher as well. And, it's a must see for anyone out there that loves the arts. It was a special movie. It was really, really special.
That is incredibly, incredibly touching.
Yeah, so if you have a chance, go check out Mad Hot Ballroom. It is so, so worth it, and you really get to see. In fact, when you're looking at these three schools, I kept saying to Sutton, I was like, this feels like three different countries. These are three public schools in New York City. I mean, I can't believe that such diversity and such, I was blown away by it. It was special.
That's really wonderful. Was there like a follow-up with what happened to the kids since then?
No, you better believe that I like started digging because I was like, "What? This was 17 years ago. They must be going on." I would be curious if any listeners know of any of the students that maybe they turned out somewhere. I think a couple of them went into the arts, but I don't know any names off the top of my head of that are on Broadway in Hamilton right now. But perhaps, who knows? I'm sure, though, that there are students in the program that aren't a part of the documentary, but I'm sure there are students who went through the program who eventually went into the arts. I mean, I imagine there has to be. So if you're someone out there who was a part of this this dancing classrooms in your public school, if you went to New York City, I'd be really curious what your experience was with that. And incidentally, the title song of this 2005 movie, the Mad Hot Ballroom song, is written by Stephen Lutback, who of Gentleman's Guide. So I thought that was kind of interesting, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he wrote the title song for it. This was many years before Gentleman's Guide came out, even though he probably was writing Gentleman's Guide at this time. But I thought that was kind of interesting to see his name on there. So that was cool.
That's really cool. Well, I got to watch it. I've heard the title go by, but I didn't know what it was about.
Yeah, it's really worth it. It's special. Yeah, a really uplifting, feel-good movie. Really wonderful. So check out Mad Hot Ballroom.
Ooh, okay. I will check out Mad Hot Ballroom.
And what do you have? Oh, yes. Sorry, transition. Go for it. Sorry.
You sound like a Lifetime movie. I'm sorry. It's okay. You can do what you want. You can talk. You can say what you want.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Mine is a book.
Oh.
It's a book, and it's one of those books that I was like, how have we not talked about this before? And I went through to look at our catalog to see what we had talked about, and it was not on our list. And so I wanted to talk about it.
Is it written by Stephen Susskind?
It is not.
Is it written by Ethan Mordden?
It is not.
Okay, I don't know what it is.
I'll give you a clue. It was written by someone we've interviewed.
Ted Chapin?
Yes.
Is it the Follies book?
Everything Was Possible.
I was just thinking about this today. That is so funny that I love Ted Chapin so much. He is such a great human being.
He is one of the kindest people.
Yeah, and I'm just, such a fan. Good job, Rob. I cannot believe we have not discussed this book yet.
No, and we've even interviewed Ted.
I know.
So how did this slip by?
I'll tell you
why. I was going through my house in L.A., and I was getting rid of a lot of books and donating them to the library.
Oh.
And there were some books I'm like, oh, I don't want to give this away. And one of them that I came across was the Everything Was Possible book. And the reason I didn't want to give it away was because I remembered one Christmas, my parents were like, what do you want more than anything? And I was like, I want Ted Chapin's book, Everything Was Possible. And that's the last time I can remember myself really wanting something for Christmas.
Oh.
So Doctor, what does that mean?
I don't know, but it's adorable.
So for those of you who aren't aware, Ted Chapin, who is the president of the Rodgers and Hammerstein organization, although I think he might have a different title now. No, is he still? I feel like he didn't that change for him at some point?
I think you are correct. And
anyway,
you can go, you can go listen to a number, I forget what number it is, insert number 20-something, of our interview with Ted. We'll post that as well, just to follow up on that.
It was so great. And if you remember, Ted, Ted's father was Skylar Chapin, who was the GM over at the Metropolitan Opera, and he was the Commissioner of Cultural Affairs for New York City and all that stuff. He had a pretty incredible life. And Ted was always interested in doing theater. And so Ted, you know, was a PA on a couple of shows and all that stuff. And somehow he was able to get himself a gopher position on this new Hal Prince, Stephen Sondheim musical called The Girls Upstairs, which was later changed into Follies. And what Ted did, which was so brilliant, was at 20, he kept a diary because he had to turn in the diary for credit for his classes. That was like his gophering was his independent study.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine that's your independent study? You're going to watch Follies being created.
Yeah, crazy.
So
oh, hi, Hal. Hi,
hi, Hal. Hi, everybody.
Oh, Michael Bennett, nice to see you. It's great to see you, yes.
What was your name, Mark Bennett?
Yeah.
Michael Bennett. Nice to meet you.
Oh, Michael, great, okay.
Nice to meet you.
Oh, my gosh.
And so he kept this diary that he was attending to turn in for class. And then years later, once he realized that this show was changed the musical theater landscape, he decided to go back, look at the diaries again, and publish them.
Great.
And so what Everything Was Possible is about is really a bird's eye view of a creation of one of the most incredible musicals in musical theater history. Mm-hmm. But from the point of view of, we don't know what this thing is.
Right.
And so you read that, like, going in, there was no Loveland sequence that was fully formed at this point.
Right.
And characters were changing, lines were changing. It seems that musicals back then were so much more experimental in the rehearsal process, as opposed to today, where it's like they have 95 workshops, and then we'll...
You're right. I just was reading, I mean, like you do, yesterday I was reading Sondheim, that book, you know, Finishing the Hat, and I was on the Follies chapter, and I was flabbergasted when I saw, when he wrote, oh yeah, we didn't really know how it was going to end when we were in rehearsals, and, you know, we added this, and then we realized, oh, it's going to be Ben's breakdown, not, I thought, how in the world could you be 2 weeks in of a Broadway rehearsal, and then you don't even know how you're going to end it yet? It blows my mind.
Yeah, isn't, I mean, it's so incredible. I mean, the one musical that I think in the past maybe 10 years that maybe comes close, and listeners correct me, is I feel that Shuffle Along was like that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Shuffle Along was having a lot of new changes being put in and put out
during
the rehearsal process while they were playing in front of an audience. But that's something we don't have anymore. Now it's simply like we'll workshop it to death and then, you know, maybe this light will be blue instead of pink, and we'll call
we'll
it a day.
We'll get lucky. Yeah.
And we'll get lucky. Yeah.
Yeah, and for someone like Ted to have been there in sort of like an observing, non-pressured role, and to get his observations on that with sort of no, you know, he didn't care one way or the other. He was just observing it. I think that's pretty sensational.
And one of the things he does in the book, which I think is so incredible, is he recreates these stories, but not with hindsight, not with saying, and, you know, and Losing My Mind is the most brilliant ballad. He does not put that on there. Or, you know, John McMartin's performance was one of the most epic in musical theater. He doesn't come in from that point of view. It's like you are in the room as this is being created. So thank God Ted needed some college credit.
Oh, amazing.
Because otherwise, who would know? I mean, he's also got some really fun stories in there about some of. He was tasked to escort some of the older ladies around.
Oh,
and they took a liking to him, and then two of them got jealous over him. you know, good old Ted.
Right.
But anyway, the book is really this brilliant observation of how the geniuses of musical theater, Hal Prince, Stephen Sondheim, Michael Bennett, Boris Aronson, who am I forgetting? Florence Klotz, you know.
Kelly Aldridge, yeah.
you know, all of these people that coming together to create this beautifully epic piece of musical theater. And the fact that he was there, like I said, is really fascinating. So if you get a chance, pick up a copy of Everything Was Possible by Ted Chapin. The book came out, I believe, in 2003. And it's really fabulous. And there seems to be so much more folly stuff going on. Did you see the MT Live?
I did not get to see that yet. I failed.
You didn't fail. You didn't fail. So as maybe our listeners know, but Imelda Staunton just did Follies at the National Theatre in London, and they're, thank God for NT Live. National Theatre Live is broadcasting it, and I have not seen it, but I hear it's quite stunning.
Yeah, I heard that as well, yeah.
So I think it's wonderful to just go back and revisit this. And also the foreword is by the wonderful Frank Rich, who wrote, whose whole career was really made off of his Harvard Crimson Review for Follies when he was just a college student.
Right.
Follies, what is it about Follies that is so powerful? Because people just worship it.
They absolutely worship it. I wonder if it has something to do with the fact that it's one of those shows that the older you get something out of it different as you age. And I think that there's something about nostalgia and the road you didn't take. And what that, I think that, I don't know, this is my own hypothesis, but I wonder if people connect to that, that sort of looking back and wondering what you could have done. And also the way that it ate like wine. It ages beautifully as you get older with it.
I think that's a brilliant way of putting it.
What's your idea?
I agree with you totally, because I remember listening to it when I was younger and liking it and going, oh, that's really smart. That's really smart. I wonder what it's like to feel that way. And now being like, well, now I know what it's like to feel that way. And then I think in 20 years to say, I really know what it's like to feel that way.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it for sure.
I mean, I think this show is summed up perfectly in Ben's song, The Road You Didn't Take, because every single character is dealing with a regret, and we all have regrets in our life. And we all sit there and we all daydream about what could have been, what might have been, had we done A or had we done B. And that's universal, whether it's, you know, a bunch of people at a folly show or it's, you know, us in our own lives. That doesn't go away. That just doesn't go away.
Right.
And also, I think it's one of Sondheim's most clever scores. I mean, the fact that there's so much, and he says this, it's not, you know, telling tales out of school, but the fact that he tries to emulate Berlin, or he tries to emulate Cole Porter, or De Silva, Brown, and Henderson, and he does it so brilliantly.
And Porter, I was just reading that in the Finishing the Hat book, because he said, well, this is a song I was trying to do Porter. This is a song I was doing Porter, but with Dorothy Fields lyrics. I mean, that specific he was trying to get, it blows my mind.
It's really incredible. It's really incredible. And to think of, I mean, you know, we did not see it, obviously, but how many people do you know of a certain age that you'll say, what's your favorite musical? And they will say the word Follies as if they were speaking of something religious.
Totally. Totally. Exactly. It's reverent. It's a reverent piece.
It's sacred to them. It's sacred. So I so wonder what that experience was like to have sat in that theater and seen that show play out. I mean, we've seen productions of it since.
Yeah.
But there must have been, you know, somebody was saying this, and I can't remember who, I feel like it was one of our listeners who was saying that, oh, you know what, who it is? I think it's John Mass who tweets at us all the time.
He's the one who's
angry that we don't have the Helen Gallagher episode anymore.
I'm angry too, John.
John, I'm telling you, we're trying. She doesn't pick up the phone anymore.
Oh my God.
But he was saying what was really interesting about the original novel we don't really have today in any of the productions is the nostalgia value. Is that, you know, Dorothy Collins, when people saw her on stage, there was this automatic nostalgia that came. I was trying to think, who would that be today? You know, who today do we feel nostalgia for when we see them going, oh my God, they're still around?
Joyce DeWitt?
You know, let me tell you something, Kevin. I just met Joyce DeWitt tonight for the first time. I'm a happy man. I am a happy man. She hugged me. She said, what do you want to be called, Robert or Rob?
Rob
is fine. She said, you can call me Joycey. She took photos of everybody in the lobby.
Joycey?
Everybody in the rehearsal hall.
Oh,
yes.
God bless her.
That is a pro. She could
that
do anything she wants, period. I need to lay down now, Kevin. I'm very angry.
And just for the record, tell us why you met her, even though this will have aired after the concert, but you do have to say it out loud.
Absolutely. So we did at 54 Below, we did Candor and Ebbs. You probably have heard me mention this now 90 times, so I'm shilling for it like crazy.
No.
Candor and Ebbs, Woman of the Year, which is this, I'm sorry, I think it's a fantastic score that does not get the due that it deserves. I don't
you
know
do
why
it
has. I really do. I think it's so
it's
much
a favorite
fun.
Thing. It was a favorite thing.
It was a favorite thing. But I'm always wondering, like, why hasn't Encores done this at some point? Patti LuPone and Mandy Patinkin?
Done.
Or Maren and Stokes again?
Oh.
Maybe Andy Carl and Orfe? Whatever.
Or Maren and her husband, Jason Dandelion.
Or Maren and Jason. We've got options here, people, and no one was doing it, so I stepped in.
Make
Woman of the Year great.
Yes.
we're doing it on Thursday, although the episode, or we're doing it on Wednesday, so you know this episode will come out on Thursday. And based on the rehearsals, I think it's going to be pretty awesome. I mean,
amazing.
The cast sounds fantastic, and we tried to get. You know, we tried to celebrate what Lauren Bacall brought to it originally, which was this cult-like status. And so we have, like, Joyce DeWitt, who doesn't really do musical theater. She's known for television. Or Eve Plum, who was Jan on The Brady Bunch. Like that. And then we have, like, Lipsinka. John Epperson is in it. And Christine Petty and Julia Murney and Dee Hody and Anita Gillette. I mean, it's just, like, this revolving door of brilliance. So I'm excited for it. I'm really, really excited for
amazing.
It. That's how I got to meet Joyce DeWitt.
Joyce DeWitt.
And she has the opening number of the show, and I hope the other actors aren't going to be angry, but as soon as she's done, I'm leaving. I'm literally walking out with her.
Nothing
Uber
else to live for.
And be like, goodbye, Joyce. But no, she's very, very sweet, and she's wonderful. But that idea of nostalgia, you know, who do we look at today and go, oh, you know, we feel something for them? Because Dorothy Collins was television sweetheart. So who do we have today in the past 30 or 40 years that would be television sweetheart?
So television sweetheart, but still does stage. That would be like Alexis Smith was that movie star, but then she sort of, you know, is that what you kind of mean? I mean, I don't know if I'm understanding.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Like who would, like when you saw Alexis Smith, you would go, oh my God, she used to be so pretty.
Right.
Or she used to
right.
be this. She used to be that.
Or like, Nanette, you know, those ladies, Patsy Kelly.
Yes.
And yes, but I see what you're saying. Like who has done that recently that came out of nowhere and was like, oh wow. I just love Angela Lansbury, except she's ever present. She's ubiquitous.
I was thinking like a Kim Basinger or a Michelle Pfeiffer or Helen.
Yeah.
So an actress who was very popular for a while and then just sort of faded away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's tough. That's tough. So I don't know.
Show business, such a fickle industry, you know? And so it is possible to have been at the very, very top. And then that's how Mimi Hines killed me because she was never on my radar until I met Mark Sendroff and then we interviewed her and I was so ignorant until I did my research, you know, and to find out that this, you know, she was a mega, mega star in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know.
That's what I find so fascinating. Every time they do a Follies production, I find that the supporting players are tasked with that element of nostalgia.
Indeed.
Where you go, oh my gosh, they're still around?
Yeah.
Or, oh, I remember her, but it's not for the leads. But the original production had that for the leads as well, if not more so, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, you're right.
You know, Bernadette Peters comes on, and you're like, that is Bernadette fucking Peters. That is a star.
Right, right. That's a good one. Maybe our listeners will have some ideas of you know, legends of yore that we are nostalgic about that we'd love to see again, you know, other than Joyce DeWitt, of course.
I think she would be a great Sally.
Actually, yeah, you're right. She looked great.
Just,
she sent me that. Yeah,
I'm just saying she looks fantastic. And Patrick Duffy can be Ben Stone.
Oh, well, yeah.
I need, and you know what? He still works
Suzanne
all the time.
Suzanne Struthers.
Get her in.
Something.
Richard, I love
Sally Struthers.
Oh, Sally. Sally Struthers as Sally Plummer is actually a really good idea with Rob Reiner as Buddy.
This is great. I'm excited.
That's
I can't
all,
see this.
You know, hey, I'm casting it. Don Johnson is Ben Stone.
Oh, my gosh.
And then you need a...
Cheech and Chong. Cheech and Chong could be in there somewhere. I mean,
Cheech and Chong as...
They can sing
that.
Yeah, couple.
I was going to say that Cheech and Chong can sing Rain on the Roof.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe that's what it needs. Maybe it's a reunion of like a Laugh-In type show.
Yeah. Oh, I like watching Laugh-In sometimes.
So we'll just bump it up. So right? Well, Kevin, I think we've really, really come up with some great ideas tonight.
You're welcome, everyone. You're welcome.
You're welcome, world. You're welcome.
Yep.
And then
next week,
actually, it'll be exciting because Kevin and I, next week or the week after, we're seeing a lot of shows. We're catching up a little bit.
Yeah, that'll be fun. That'll be really fun.
Bands visit.
Ooh.
I got tickets to see SpongeBob.
Oh, you're fancy.
I'm very excited. I'm excited to see new musicals, new voices.
Huzzah.
Huzzah indeed, my friend. So, once again, my favorite thing, besides Dreamcasting Follies, nostalgia appropriately, please, we'll take ideas, is Ted Chapin's wonderful book, Everything Was Possible.
Amazing. And mine was Mad Hot Ballroom, the documentary from 2005. Check it out.
All right, till next time.
Bye, everybody.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.